for a variety of reasons. I used to think there was something wrong with me. I've moved around a lot in my life. I wasn't raised like that. I wasn't an army kid. I grew up in a house in suburban New York for the first 17 years of my life. But in high school, my family moved, and I thought my life was over. I mean, I really did. Because I was operating under some assumptions that had no basis in truth or reality, but I had projected what I could imagine a life unfolding in front of me, that I would stay in that house, I would go to college, I would get drafted. If I survived the Vietnam War, I would come back, I would get a job in New York City, blah, 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 blah. And as soon as I moved, I realized, or I came to realize, that was not what was in front of me. And my life has been a pilgrimage, crossing bridges of place and of ideas, which I would have never anticipated from the house that I grew up in as something that could be a part of my life. And for a while, because I seem to change jobs more frequently than most human beings do, and apartments, I mean, if my bathroom got dirty, I just used to move. I thought that was normal. But I am a pilgrim. I came to realize that that is part of my nature. And that song, Bridges, that we just heard, you know, to be a human being is a bridge experience itself. At some point, we adopted the notion that we first heard from Teilhard de Chardin that we are spiritual beings having a human experience, which is totally in accord with what the perennial philosophy teaches us, as well as the science of mind, that we are an eternal being. Some part of us always has been. That part of us is inhabiting our body, our experience at this point, and that part of us is the thing that will continue on where we're complete with this body and this human experience. So this becomes a bridge experience in itself, human life. And that part of us that was, is, and will be is also a bridge, if you will. And what part of us is that? That's the question today that I'd like to address. Because that's where, after all this time thinking about life and spirit and mind, that's where I am. That's the threshold I'm on right now. I want to focus or double down on spirit at this point in my life. I'm not so concerned with things or stuff, but that spirit seems to be where the game is and where the gain really is. And that part of ourselves has many names, the eternal part of us. It is a bridge from this life. It is a continuity to the ground of being, to divine mind, if you will. It is called soul in some philosophies. It's called the self by Ralph Waldo Emerson. I know that keeps coming up, but I guess that's on my mind. When he talks about self-reliance, it's the self of you that is real, that doesn't change. It's called the self in Jungian spirituality. So it's something, it's a capacity that is acknowledged by every wise person who's ever lived. And yet we don't seem to exercise it that much in this lifetime. You know, if you wanted to cook a great meal for somebody, but you didn't have a clue what the ingredients might be to make the world's most perfect lasagna, but just kind of threw stuff together and put it in the oven without doing any preparation, I mean, how would that work? How would that come out? I still have dreams about high school and not being prepared for tests in high school. And you remember those dreams or those real experiences? If you had a big test coming up and you didn't study at all, I mean, how do you think that's really going to work out? It's not. If there's anything in life, if you want to be a dancer, declare yourself to be a great dancer, and you don't ever take any dance class, but show up at an audition and, you know, plot about a stage, how is that going to work out? You're going to get that job. You're going to get thank you very much next. And if there's a part of you that is eternal, but you're not working with it consciously in this lifetime, when you get to the next experience, how do you think that's going to work out? Well, you know, what we learn in our study is things probably are not that different on the other side as they are here. They're different in kind and perhaps in quantity, but not qualitatively. So it would be wise while we are here having this experience to also keep in mind that there is that part of us that's going to go on, and what can I do? How can I be using that part? How can I acknowledge it? How can I bring it into my everyday experience so I have an optimum experience of this life as well as being prepared for crossing the threshold? And that thing is soul. Let's just call it soul. How do you use it in this lifetime? How do you recognize it? That's a very fair question, yes? And I think how we recognize it is not so much in striving desperately to come up with a logical definition of what it is, but to come up with a feeling, an idea, a remembrance, if you will, of times you feel you have experienced it in your life. As a young, isolated white kid living in suburban New York, I was very aware all of a sudden that there was someone named Aretha Franklin who was being called the Queen of Soul. And how was it that she was given that title immediately upon her breakthrough when she was still just a kid? And I think, well, what is soul? Well, soul is black music. Well, all right. That was good for a little while. But what is it really? How do you recognize this capacity in you that is a soul? We all have it. And as far as we know so far, human beings are the only people that have this capacity. So why not learn to get familiar with it and see what it has for you, what advantage it has for you, and what it might add to your experience of everyday life? I know there have been times in my life, this is how I know that there is some part of me that is other than my experience, and it's other than my expectation, it's other than my intentions. But there's something real in me that has responded to experiences that I've encountered. And this has to be true of all of us. I know it is. In the old school language of metaphysics, they would call it a quickening of spirit. I'm not sure how that would be defined. But I know in my life, for example, the first time I went to the Museum of Modern Art in New York, I was probably 15. And I had the vocabulary I use at this point is I had an ecstatic opening to a larger sense of self, to something else that was going on in the world that I didn't know anything about, but oh my God, it drew me close. And to this day, that's how I feel. I know that I'm having a soul experience, that I'm receiving a direct communication from something, some organized idea or activity that speaks directly to my soul, not through my head, not through my logical mind, but a direct communication to soul. And this ecstatic opening doesn't take place in a frenzy of any kind necessarily for me, but it simply makes me want to be close, that I can literally feel something drawing me close to it in an unguarded way, in a completely unguarded, open way. I don't know about chakras, so I can't really give you an informed talk about that kind of thing. It's probably something very compatible. But the question is, and this is your homework, even though this isn't quite the end of the talk, this is your homework for the week. When have you been drawn close in an unguarded way? That's going to vary, even when we review in our minds some of the relationships that we've had. Sometimes we are drawn close, but we're very guarded. And sometimes we're drawn close, and we are completely open and defenseless. I think in the Course of Miracles it says, in our defenselessness lies our only security. And how could that be? That's counterintuitive, but it speaks to something, it speaks to some kind of ultimate reality, if you will. That the only things that I know that I can be truly sure of in this lifetime are those things that I don't have to qualify in my mind, I don't have to make excuses for, I don't have to be weird about or shy about, that I can be utterly defenseless and draw close. I think we see this sometime in our animal companions and friends, that there is a closeness that happens. There's a defenselessness. Sometimes I look at little tiny animals. How do they feel so secure when they're the size of your shoe? I mean, if there was a human being standing next to me that was 400 feet tall, I'd feel a little threatened. I would be nervous. How is it that little kitty cats aren't? There's some aspect of soul at work there, because it's not entitlement. It's not about earning a place. And conversely so, it's why I know my poor cat Sophie has issues. She does. She has she has issues. She cannot draw close. She cannot be approached. That something happened that destroyed some element in her psyche before she came to my house. What is it that draws you close in an open-hearted way? It's probably not a whole lot of different things. There are some things. But this is what we all strive to discover, that so many of us, for such a long period of time, are going, oh, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do next. I would give myself to anything if I knew what it was. Well, you know what it is. I believe we know what it is, and we know what it is from birth, but we talk ourselves out of it. Or we believe input from an outside source. That whatever it is, my heart, my soul is completely available to, and this lifetime, we put it in a box as unattainable, unrealistic, that boring, how do you think you're going to make a living at that, mister? That whole conversation. The thing is that people that really, really, really achieve something significant on this planet are people who really are doing soul work. And again, this doesn't have to mean that you have to win a Nobel Prize or that you have to have X numbers of dollars, but people who are happy to get out of bed in the morning and to do A, B, or C are the people that are in tune with the infinite part of themselves, in tune with the gift that they have to give, in tune with a process or a way of being that establishes this life as worthwhile and filled with meaning. I don't need to give lists of what it could be because that only limits it. But you know, at one point when I first moved here, I was in the wood business. And we sold fine imported hand tools, precision power equipment, and exotic hardwood. And I've got a very healthy relationship with power tools. I know that's surprising to many of you. However, very serious woodworkers would shop at this place. And because we had extraordinary material there. And there was a Japanese woodworker born in Japan here now who was dedicating his life to making dining tables using traditional Japanese tools and joinery techniques. And the reason was, is that, and this was 1982, so this is way before your interweb is invented. He said it was clear to him that the most important healing thing that can happen on the planet is for families to get together, and that the dining opportunity was a sacred activity. It still is. It doesn't happen around fast food. It happens around slow food. You see, there are so many engagements. There are so many different kinds and different ways that the soul seeks to find agency in this world for a particular purpose, and that so we might have a large and rewarding experience of this life. And as we exercise that, it is also preparing us, no doubt, it has to be the way, for that which the soul will be called upon to do in the next life. A life lived according to spiritual practice, and I feel the need to keep saying this on a regular basis, if not a weekly basis, but we're so hardwired to think that, oh, geez, you know, if I gotta be some kind of spiritual thing, I gotta do this, I gotta do that, and I have to meditate every... There's no have to. But to really slow down and see things for what they really are. A friend of mine from divinity school just retired her pulpit, sold a condo where she and her husband lived in Savannah, Georgia, and bought an RV. They were staying at the state park in Ventura for the last 2 weeks. And Arlene, is her name, is a really sophisticated person. But when I went up to have coffee with them the day before yesterday, she said, I sat in this little fold-up chair and I watched the sunset last night and I thought, my God, I'm looking at it. That's a life lived according to spirit. Bunny seems to have those experiences because she posts them most mornings when she hikes up the mountain as she does most days. To slow down, to see how fabulous people are, to make simple eye contact at the bank and at the grocery store. These are all soul exercises that do all of us so well. To listen to music with an open and undivided and uncritical heart. Well, some things you need to be critical about. I still haven't healed my issues and anger about Milli Vanilli, but that's decades old. I should probably let it go. Should probably let that one go. But do the work. The scrambling for the outside stuff is not going to get you there. Because it's never going to be enough. And it'll be way too expensive. And that should be our first clue. But to do this work is the only game that matters. And it's the only attainment that has lasting value in your life. So I will repeat your homework assignment. And your homework assignment is to remember to be aware of times where you feel you are drawn in a defenseless way close. Is it a book, a human being, hospitality of any kind? But remember and be so aware of this. This is where spiritual practice really begins and the dividends start to be harvested. When and where and how do I feel this opening to life where I can really delight in the way things are? I know that if you spend some time doing that this week, it'll be the very best part of your week. And I would like to hear about it next week from some of you when you get some insights. God bless you, friends. I appreciate you.